Shrink Wrap Radio number 778, neuroscientist and entrepreneur Ariel Garten on the latest developments in brain feedback.
And now it's time for Dr. Dave and Shrink Wrap Radio.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave and Shrink Wrap Radio.
Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
My return guest, Ariel Garten, is probably one of the most interesting people you'll meet. She is a neuroscientist, mom, former psychotherapist, former fashion designer, and the co-founder and visionary of an amazing and highly successful tech startup, Muse. Muse tracks your brain during meditation to give you real-time feedback on your meditation, guiding you into the zone and solving the problem most of us have when starting a meditation practice. Muse lets you know when you are doing it right. Among the topics we'll discuss are latest developments in the brain feedback space, how the brain functions during sleep, and how we can hack our sleep, the five essential things you can do to sleep well every night, overcoming what your brain tells you, the neuroscience of anxiety, fear, and bias, and how you can overcome it, and the launch of the digital sleeping pill. Now, here's the interview. Ariel Garten, welcome back to Shrink Wrap Radio.
It is my joy and pleasure to be here again. Hello, David.
Hello. Well, it's good to see you again. And I guess a lot's been happening in your life. I know that you're expecting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we last spoke in 2018, and I don't know if you had one child then or not.
Yes, I had a little boy who'd be about 3 at that point.
Oh,
and now
okay.
I have a little girl en route.
Oh, my goodness. That'll be a nice combo. Yeah.
Match set. Who knows how they're going to turn out, but at least they're starting at birth, boy and girl.
Yeah.
And the rest is up to them.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, maybe you can start with a little recap of your very fascinating career prior to the Muse brain scanning headset.
Sure. So currently I'm one of the founders and chief evangelism officer of Muse, the brain sensing headband that helps you meditate. Prior to that, I started out my academic career in neuroscience, really fascinated by how the brain works and understanding the workings of the mind, the brain to help us untangle the workings of the mind. And then I was also very engaged in the creation of art. I had multiple different art practices. And through both my neuroscience and my artwork, I ended up collaborating with Dr. Steve Mann. He's the inventor of the wearable computer. And he had an early brain-computer interface system that we began to use to create artistic concerts. So we'd be creating these musical engagements where people would be taking an EEG electrode on the back of their head. And by shifting their brain state, either focusing or relaxing to alter their alpha or beta waves, we would then use that signal to translate their brain activity into different sounds. And what we realized through this process is what we were really doing was classical neurofeedback. We were giving people real-time feedback on their brain. You know, not only was this beautiful, creative, artistic expression, it was actually a very valuable way to let people know the inner workings of their mind and to allow a reflection back on an individual state, focused, relaxed, or otherwise.
Now, did you say that you were putting on concerts and that was one of the elements?
Yeah. So starting in 2002, so I've been at this field of brain computer interface for, I guess, 20 years now, which is, seems shocking to say out loud. Starting in 2002, we began by creating a series of concerts where 48 people at a time could shift their brain state and create different musical experiences from it.
Oh, wow. That sounds exciting.
It yeah. is. Yeah. And it really guided us in this understanding of what it is like to hear your own mind and to make contact with your brain's activity in a transformative or meaningful way.
Do I recall that you also had some experience researching, doing some medical brain research?
Yes. So I worked in various neuroscience research labs, looking at Parkinson's disease, looking at deep brain stimulation and hippocampal neurogenesis and the relationship there. So, you know, I've gotten very lucky to taste a number of different fields. And then I was also trained as a psychotherapist and worked in private practice for a decade prior to the building of Muse. And it was really through the work as a psychotherapist that we began to think about how we apply this technology to helping people transform their minds. And the link there really became meditation. You know, we recognized that as interesting it is to hear your mind, you need to have some sort of direction to it. And what we recognized was in this practice of meditation, which I as a psychotherapist would be teaching to my patients relatively unsuccessfully, because I as a psychotherapist was meditating relatively unsuccessfully. I was really just couldn't get my head around it, pardon the pun, that with this technology that we had, where we could give you real-time feedback on your brain activity that let you know when you were focused, we ultimately recognized we could make the process of learning how to meditate more tangible and easier, and therefore easier to engage.
Yeah, yeah. And do you subscribe to the New Yorker by any chance?
I don't, but I often read it.
The reason I'm asking is their most recent issue had an article on artificial intelligence that was absolutely mind-blowing, where they were using, it was about thought reading, and they were using artificial intelligence to analyze the very complex results that come out of fMRI devices and actually beginning to be able to tell people, In crude ways still, but they see this developing rather rapidly, to tell a person some of the things they were dreaming about, just based on the fMRI data. So a lot of exciting stuff is happening. You know, in 2018, you were, when we last spoke, you had the Muse brain scanning headset. Mm-hmm. Has there been changes in the field since 2018 or in your company, Muse Scanning Headset?
Yes. So for those who don't know what this device is, It's a slim little headband that just tucks around your ears, and it gives you real-time feedback on your brain. It's a clinical-grade EEG, four channels. Two channels frontal
like
and two
this.
Channels temporal. Anybody who's watching the video can see.
This is it, right.
You can see David wearing it on his head. That was the version we had in 2018. And so there are two reading channels on the forehead, two behind the ears, and a reference at FPZ. And at that point, our main use case was a meditation tool. And so the device gives you real-time feedback on your brain during meditation to let you know when you're focused and when your mind is wandering. And it's this beautiful audio experience that really gets you to be aware of when your mind wandering, which then becomes your cue to bring your attention back to your breath. And then the sound quiets down. And so we have this very kind of engaging and rewarding mechanism to really teach you to meditate, or if you already have a practice, to give you greater insight into the practice.
Yeah. I put that on my granddaughter, who's a few years ago, so she was probably 12 or so, and she was I liked their different sound feedback that one can choose to use, and I always liked the brainstorm one, and so as you're able to quiet your mind, the rainstorm quiets. And she was so much more successful at it than I was. Let me cut in for a minute to sing the praises of today's sponsor, Masterclass. I absolutely love Masterclass to the extent that I bought several subscriptions as gifts for family members. These are classes taught by world-class masters in their own fields. For example, I've already taken classes on poetry from poet laureate Billy Collins and on songwriting from the very soulful Alicia Keys. Imagine my surprise and delight on discovering a recently added class on mindfulness by Jon Kabat-Zinn. I've never been able to attend one of his workshops, but he's the one everyone quotes, totally relevant to my work here. And he's offering a 20-lesson course on Masterclass, looking me or you right in the eye. The great thing is that the individual video lessons are each only 10 to 15 minutes, and you can watch them on whatever device you have, whether iOS, Android, desktop computer, Apple TV, Amazon Fire TV, or Roku. I mean, we're talking tons of video lessons from more than 100 of today's most brilliant minds, and they're available anytime, anywhere. An annual membership usually costs $180, which is already a bargain when you consider all the content you're getting. I highly recommend you check it out. Get unlimited access to every masterclass, and as a Shrink Wrap Radio listener, you get 15% off an annual membership. Go to masterclass.com/shrink. That's masterclass.com/shrink for 15% off masterclass. Now, back to the interview. What do we make of that, that kids can maybe... are their minds less cluttered?
So there's two things to make of it. One, so the algorithm for focused attention is built on a number of different characteristics. At this point, we have hundreds of millions of minutes of brain scans of expert meditators, of novice meditators, of non-meditators. And the algorithm is quite complex, but a fair component of it is alpha activity. So when you close your eyes, you immediately engage your alpha block. When you go into a meditation, your brain becomes more coherent. You see an increase in theta activity, theta coherence, an increase in alpha activity, and a number of different things. And kids actually have incredibly powerful alpha. Huh. So, you know, when they close their eyes and they're able to get to that state, they have a very, very, very strong alpha representation. And actually, as you age, your alpha peak frequency and your power of alpha tends to decline.
Like so many other things that decline like, if we age.
Well, so there's one thought that the alpha rhythm kind of is a marker for consciousness. So as you're falling asleep, for example, the thing that you see is your brain going from alpha into delta in the complete absence of alpha. And then if somebody awakens for a brief moment as they're in that N1 sleep, as they come towards consciousness, you see this little burst of alpha coming in and then disappearing as they fall back. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there is the idea that this alpha peak frequency, as it is higher, you have more kind of alpha moments, alpha peaks within your 1 minute. It's almost as if the refresh rate on your brain is faster. And as you age, that refresh rate, that peak frequency decreases. And totally aside, there was a university, McMaster University, that was actually able to look into our database of EEG data and actually for the first time be able to quantify people's brain age based on their level of alpha frequency. So that was fascinating novel research that, you know, was quite separate from our meditation intervention, but that they were able to discover from our database.
Well, in your database and in your customer base, you've got ordinary people of one sort or another, if we can talk about ordinary people. But you also have a mix of therapists and other kinds of professionals who have been using the tool in ways to enhance their profession. So I want to ask you about what you have heard back from both the, quotes, ordinary consumers who use it and if there have been any surprises along the way, and then what you've heard from your cadre of professionals.
Sure. So from the ordinary consumer, probably, you know, ordinary in huge quotation marks, none of us is ordinary.
Yeah.
But if we're going to, you know, segregate professional psychotherapists, et cetera, from the general user base, then we'll call those, quote unquote, the ordinaries, the general user. The, you know, most predominant feedback that we get is, I finally figured out how to meditate. This has deepened my meditation practice. You know, a lot of people, when they go to meditate, they sit there. They're not entirely sure what they're supposed to be doing. Their brain is bouncing all over the place. And there's no little coach or guru or therapist in their head letting them know, yes, you're doing it right. You know, that's focused attention. Just stay there. Just don't think about anything else. You're fine. And so Muse is really able to both do that, let you know what you're supposed to be doing, and also to teach you equanimity. So how the experience works is, as your mind wanders, the sound of the rain or the wind picks up. And if you get upset about it, it'll only get louder and louder and louder. And it's only through achieving equanimity, being at peace in the moment with the experience that you're having, that that sound diminishes. And likewise, when you focus on your breath and you're able to maintain your focused attention for 5 seconds or more, you hear a little bird, which is both a reinforcement to your brain, you know, classical conditioning, you're doing it right. This is the state. Yep, stay there. And also serves to, again, teach this process of equanimity. Because if you find out that that bird is a quote unquote reward for being in the target state, then you're like, I got a bird. I'm so awesome. Yeah. And the bird just flies away. Yeah, so you have to be equally as equanimous, uninvested in your rewards as your failures.
Yeah.
So anyways.
Yeah. Because I've had that experience of, you know, getting excited. Oh, I'm having birds. And then that pulls you out. And it reminds me of trying to develop lucidity in dreams. And that was a big problem for me, has been, of getting really excited. Oh, I'm lucid. And boom.
You're out of it. Yeah, you have to be able to stick with the experience and not have a metacognitive experience of the experience. You need to be in the experience.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So we now have a kind of general consumer user base of over 500,000 people. So, you know, we hear all sorts of amazing things, like the transformative power of helping people manage their anxious thoughts or their, you know, return to work or manage their sleep. And then from a professional perspective, we have now thousands of clinicians that use the device with their patients. So they will, you know, recommend it in the course of practice, or they will work, you know, in session teaching a patient to meditate using the Muse, and then the patient's able to take the Muse home or, you know, purchase one through the clinician. And so that's been really successful. We also have meditation teachers. This is one of the most surprising things that I heard. Now that the device has been in market for 7 or 8 years, I've now met multiple meditation teachers just chatting with them. And I'm like, so how'd you learn to meditate? And by now, two of them had said, by using Muse. They became professional meditation teachers.
Wow, yay. Yeah.
And then we have a whole other side of professionals and clinicians, which are researchers. So there's been over 200 studies published using Muse, either using it as a meditation intervention that's like, that you can actually quantify. So you know if the subject in your study has been doing their meditation or not, and you can get a dose-dependent response. Because we have a dashboard that lets you track each of your clients or patients or subjects. And then also using lots of research using Muse just as a clinical grade EEG. So there were two papers that were recently published using Muse for stroke detection. Another paper using Muse for detection of age-related cognitive decline. And then on the meditation side, so Mayo Clinic published a paper using Muse's meditation intervention with breast cancer patients, demonstrating that they were able to reduce the stress and fatigue of the cancer care process through using Muse. And now they are testing it in multiple other conditions like fibromyalgia, Cushing syndrome, et cetera.
This is really fascinating. Is there a place on your website where people can go to find about those research studies if they wanted to follow up in more depth?
Yep. So the website is choosemuse.com. Choose Muse, M-U-S-E. And if you just go /research, there's a drop-down menu where you can find some of our selected published studies.
Yeah, that's very exciting. It must be really exciting for you to see this tool that you've developed being used in a variety of effective ways.
beyond what I could have imagined. I mean, when you create something, you hope it's going to work. You know, yeah, you put all this work and effort into something thinking, you know, you have a hypothesis that this could work. And I have to say it's unbelievably gratifying and beyond our wildest imaginations that it has been this effective and this this embraced. So I feel very grateful for whatever combination of luck and drive and team was able to somehow pull this off.
Yes, yes. Now, I suppose this device falls into what has become called the wearable space or wearable computing.
Correct.
And the competitive environment must have changed quite a bit since you first entered that space. And what are you seeing? And are there surprising competitive products or things that are catching your attention about new directions that you would want to take your own product?
Sure. So when we first started, we started really creating the product from 2009 on. 2012, it started to form as the Muse. In 2014, it landed in market. And so from the meditation side, we were way early. You know, we'd go to raise money from VCs for this cool new wearable, and they'd say, this technology is amazing, and wearables were just becoming hot. And they'd say, like, what's the killer app? And we'd say, meditation. And they'd look at us like we were crazy, like shoo us out of the room. Yeah. And now 2021, and literally those VCs use Muse to meditate. So that was, you know, one market trend that has changed dramatically. The wide acceptance of meditation is something that is a thing that everybody should be doing.
Yeah.
And then on the wearable side, you know, when we were starting, the big wearables there were the Jawbone Up and the Nike Fuel Band, neither of which are, Nike Fuel doesn't exist anymore, and Jawbone Up probably has disappeared. You know, Fitbit came up and that became the next big wearable. And then the Apple Watch. And now there are proliferation of different wearables. There's literally hundreds of wrist-borne wearables that are able to track your steps or your movement or your heart rate. There's interesting ones in the psychotherapeutic space like Leaf, that is a patch that you put on your heart that's able to measure your heart rate and therefore your anxiety levels. There's another interesting one called Apollo that it's a stimulator. So it's a distal vagal nerve stimulation. So you put it on your wrist or on your leg, and it just delivers gentle vibrations similar to stimulating touch that apparently affects the vagus nerve to increase calm. We have some people that use Apollo and Muse simultaneously. So there's been a number of interesting interventions. And then, of course, on the sleep side, there are a ton of new sleep wearables, which is a space that we're now entering into. Most of the wearables are focused on tracking your sleep, you know, something under your bed, on your wrist, on your bedside. But what we've really focused on is an amazing intervention that helps you fall asleep.
That's something that so many people suffer from. I know people that just I know people who have been on sleep medications for most of their adult lives. And, you know, and I'm shocked because having interviewed lots of people in that, in and around that, you know, the news is always that those medications are not good for you and can be terribly addictive, et cetera, all kinds of problems.
And they don't even improve your sleep. So typical soporific medications like Ambien, et cetera, actually dysregulate your delta waves. So you're not even getting good sleep. You're getting just like groggy sleep.
Yeah.
So with Muse, we've created something that we sort of tongue-in-cheek call the digital sleeping pill. What we discovered from our consumer base when we asked them, what is your favorite time to meditate or your most popular time? It was, you know, 6-7 in the morning and then 10 o'clock at night. And the people who were using Muse to meditate at 10 o'clock at night were doing so to help them fall asleep. And they were finding it really efficacious. And so we kind of dug into that and recognized that we could build a purpose-built device, which we now called Muse S. It's a soft headband that you can fall asleep in. And it not only gives you guided meditations to help you fall asleep, but what we're actually able to do, since there's a clinical grade EEG on your head, we're able to track your level of wakefulness, like moment by moment. And so we're able to give you these beautiful guided interventions that can bring you into the hypnagogic state and track your brain activity as we do that. And so as we start to see your brain move into stage one sleep, we actually start to adjust the audio and quiet it down and slow it down and shift it to then further encourage your brain into sleep. And then once we see that you are in sleep, we totally drop out the audio, giving you the opportunity to fall asleep.
Good.
And if you don't fall asleep, of course, the device knows. So it's able to bring back the same intervention and slowly take your brain out of its wandering discursive place, get it focused, quiet it down, and give it the chance to sleep again. And then if you wake up in the middle of the night, since you can wear the device the whole night and it tracks your sleep like a clinical grade PSG, polysomnography system. If you wake up in the middle of the night, the muse wakes up along with you and again brings in the same intervention that helped you fall asleep in the first place to bring you back to sleep.
That sounds fascinating. I was looking at it on your website, and it actually, you might want to look at the video that you that you have describing each of those events. And the one that was that tells you about what happens when you wake up and need to fall back asleep again, it's very, very short. It was like all the information wasn't there. So you might want to check that. At least that's how it seemed to me.
Yeah. I appreciate that. That's really helpful feedback.
Oh, good. I hope so. Yeah, that seems just so exciting because so many people. I've done a number of interviews with sleep experts and so on. Now, how's this been received for people in sleep clinics and practitioners who are particularly in the sleep area?
Sure. So it is relatively new. It's already in market and people are using it. So you can start using it today. But it hasn't had the same history of as our others. But it's being received incredibly well. So there are now multiple studies, 3, 4, 5, using Muse as a sleep tracking device. So lots of sleep researchers are very excited to have this device that you can now just use in a subject's bed without having to send them to a sleep lab and get full quality, full night data. So both the individual can see it and we have a different backend for researchers to see it. And then Dr. Adrian Owen, who's a British neuroscientist at Western University, he ran an amazing study using our Muse Go to Sleep intervention, and he saw a 20% improvement in scores on the Pittsburgh Sleep Quality Index. So individuals did the PSQI, which is the gold standard for sleep quality, prior to starting their Muse sessions. At the beginning of the intervention, they used their Muse Go to Sleep and Muse meditation for 6 weeks. And then at the end, there's 157 individuals in the study, a 20% increase, which Dr. Owen thought was like an incredible effect size based on the studies that he typically does. And they reported increased sleep time, decreased latency to sleep, increased return to sleep, better dreams, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. So data, you know, survey says it works.
Yeah, that's really exciting. And the experience that you've had of some sleep practitioners being able to have the people do studies at home rather than have to come to their sleep lab, which is terribly uncomfortable. I haven't done it, but it sounds like it's really uncomfortable, and you get little electrodes glued onto your scalp and so on. And it seems like it would be really hard, initially at least, to fall asleep in that setting. But it sounds like you've made a giant leap forward for people that want to do either that kind of treatment or that kind of research, where people can sleep in the place where they normally go to sleep without a lot of physical disruption.
Yes, and with significantly less cost. Night in a sleep lab is like $2,000, and the device is, you know, a fraction of that and can be used over and over again. It's been amazing. We're on our way to FDA certification with it as identical to a polysomnography system.
What kind of certification was that?
Oh, FDA, Food and Drug Administration clearance. So right now the device is in the general wellness category.
Oh,
so,
FDA, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So now we have lots of clinicians and doctors that recommend it, but we're on the path to FDA clearance as a polysomnography system.
Yeah. Of course, I'm a big fan of Apple computer. I do have an Apple Watch. And does the existence of the Apple Watch somehow help facilitate your work, do you think? Or is it a competitor? Is it an inspiration? What's the interplay there?
That's a great question. So, you know, we tie into the Apple ecosystem. So you can see your minutes of meditation and Muse and your HealthKit data. So in that way, it's a support. We use the iPhone, you know, and Android. So the existence of wearable computing in general and phone in your pocket, devices like the Apple Watch are definitely helpful. They make people more aware. It also causes some confusion. I've had a number of people say like, oh, I can get an EKG just like my Apple Watch. It's like, no, EEG is different. We use EEG, you know, EEG is your brain waves. EKG is your heart. Like the yes. Apple Watch can't show you what's going on in your brain.
Right.
So, you know, we have advantages over the Apple Watch. But Apple Watch is also a great way to use a device as a data gathering tool. If you don't have your phone in the bedroom, you know, there's lots of ways that the ecosystems work really nicely together.
Yeah. Now, speaking of heart rate variability has become a big target of feedback, and with companies entering in the wearable space, right, paying attention to heart rate variability. Is that something that Muse is able to monitor or not? And what's your take on the either importance or unimportance of heart rate variability?
Sure. So with Muse, both in the Muse 2, which is the device that you are wearing, and yeah. the Muse S, the new sleep device, we have a PPG, so photoplethysmograph. So it's able to measure your heart rate from which you then derive your heart rate variability. Heart rate variability is a really meaningful metric. For those of you that don't know, the heart rate variability comes from your sinusoidal arrhythmia. So as you breathe in, your heart rate increases. As you breathe out, your heart rate decreases. And it's that delta between your highest heartbeat on your increase, on your in-breath, and your lowest heartbeat on your out-breath that indicates your heart rate variability. And you want that to be high. So as I'm breathing in and I'm able to get a good breath and my heart's working well and pumping really fast and my blood pressure is increasing as I breathe in, at a point there is my, it becomes a trigger for my vagus nerve to say, whoa, you know, blood pressure is really high, heart rate's high, let's come in and slow it right down. And the more your vagus nerve can slow down your heart rate, the more resilient your system is, the healthier your system is. And so somebody with a high heart rate variability, able to get it high on the in-breath and low quickly on the out-breath, is somebody who has a very resilient system. They're typically more athletic. They're typically younger. They're typically less depressed. And so this is actually a really meaningful metric.
Yeah, so it's showing a kind of flexibility, right, or lack of it.
Exactly. Just grab a glass of water.
Yeah, well, I have not heard it explained as clearly as you just explained it. That's just so clear. Yeah.
And so what you see when you look at like a map of somebody's heartbeat, which you can do in Muse. So Muse, we have a beautiful meditation for the heart, and you're literally listening to the beating of your heart like the beating of a drum. And as your heart rate increases, there's a little shimmery sound to let you know. And as your heart rate decreases, there's a little like, you know, lower sound to let you know. So you're actually able to tune yourself into the beating of your heart, the increases and the decreases. Mm. And this tunes something called your interoception, your ability to sensitively perceive your internal state.
Right.
And research demonstrates those with higher interoception have lower levels of stress because you're more able to be aware of your own body's responses and then bring in an intervention. So in the Muse heart rate meditation, you're hearing your heartbeat go up and down. And then at the end, you'll see a graph. In all of our Muse interventions, you get data at the end. So you see a graph that actually shows you your heartbeat going up and down and up and down. And when you're stressed, you'll see that the line is small and squiggly, very constrained. Mm. And when you're able to be relaxed and at ease, you'll see this beautiful, big, rolling sinusoidal wave. And so you can really see and get how it being in a relaxed, deep breathing state is clearly better for your body and mind. You know, there's a sense of rhythm or harmony that arises. Whereas when you're stressed, you know, the line is just small and jagged and constrained.
Yeah. Wow. So am I able to do that with a Muse 2 that I have?
Yep. With your Muse 2, you can. So the typical one that everybody does is the mind meditation. That's giving you real-time feedback on your brain. If you just scroll to the left, there's a little, you can see a little heart. And that will be the heart meditation. We also have breath meditation, so different guided meditations for breathing, box breathing, a range of different meditations to either energize you or slow you down based on your breath. Then we have our body meditation to help you find stillness in the body because there are movement sensors on the device. And then there's a range of guided meditations, which are, you know, hundreds and hundreds of meditations for whatever is coming up in your client's life or your own life.
Well, without giving anything away that's too proprietary, can you say anything about what your vision for the future of the company or future products that you're thinking about?
Sure. So for us, it's really about getting an individual in touch with themselves to allow them to make behavioral change. So when you're able to make a pattern visible, you're able to be much more directive on how you actually change it. You know, we all know habit change is important, but how many of us actually stick to it? So with our, you know, meditation intervention, we're able to teach people to stay calm, show them what the state is, reinforce them for being there, encourage them for coming back and doing the meditation daily. With our go to sleep interventions, we're able to really teach people that they can sleep. You know, one of the biggest issues that keeps people from sleeping is anxiety around not sleeping. You know, you go to bed and you're like, oh no, I'm going to not sleep. And then that moment of anxiety makes you more awake. You wake up in the night, you're like, oh, it's 2 a.m. And then your discursive mind starts thinking about what tomorrow is going to be. And so, yes, the intervention works to help you fall asleep, which is great. But the intervention also works to teach you that your body knows how to sleep. That if you just do these things and you just quiet your mind, which you can do with or without an intervention, but we're guiding you with it at first, you can actually just fall back asleep. It's safe. It's okay. You can do it. And so for us, as I said, it's really about using technologies that let you see and hear and feel yourself in new ways to help empower you with the knowledge and understanding of what you're capable of and increase your choice in order to help you make better behavioral changes in your life.
Yeah. On something that I had a note to myself here. Somewhere you talk about the 5 essential things you can do to sleep very well every night.
Sure.
What are those 5 secrets?
Happy to share those secrets. So the first one really is stress management, and it comes down to the two different pieces. One is the general stress that you have in your life. If you're able to shut down those thoughts before you get to bed, you're going to sleep much better. And the second is the stress around not sleeping. If you're able to recognize that it's okay, it's so ridiculously ironic that we worry about not sleeping and that's what keeps us awake. Actually, everybody sleeps eventually. If you simply let go of that concern, if you simply allow yourself to lie there, focus on your breath and meditate if you want, then the worst thing that's going to happen is in the morning, you will have meditated for 5 or 6 or 8 hours. But likely, most likely, you're just going to fall asleep much sooner than that. So first two. The next one is managing light. So our brain falls asleep and wakes up based on the light around us as triggered by the hormone melatonin. So when it becomes dark outside, your melatonin increases. When it becomes light outside, your melatonin decreases. If you want to sleep well each night, you probably want to start turning down your lights about 30 minutes before bedtime to start increasing the production of melatonin. Don't shine any blue lights in your eyes, you know, before you fall asleep. Don't look at your phone, watch television, etc. And make your room nice and dark to keep that melatonin production high throughout the night. And then in the morning when you wake up, get some bright light right in your eyes to shut off that melatonin production and to make you more alert, less groggy, and then better able to sleep 16 hours later. Which brings me to the next tip, which is consistency.
Yes.
So, you know, our bodies, our circadian rhythms, they are built on a rhythm. It needs to be consistent. So choose a time to go to sleep and wake up. It's around 7 to 8 hours between, you know, the sleeping and the waking, and do that consistently every night. And you will then train your body to have its beautiful burst of melatonin, you know, right at 10 p.m. every single night. And then in the morning, shine the light in your eye at 6 a.m. and, you know, shut off that tap. And then like clockwork, it will work like that on successive nights. It just takes some training. So use light and use it consistently. And then the last thing is caffeine. So there's a second system in our brain that brings us to sleep, and that's called sleep pressure. Sleep pressure is governed by a little molecule called adenosine. As adenosine binds to its receptor in your brain, it increases your sleep pressure. And the more adenosine that binds, the sleepier and sleepier and sleepier we get until we just cannot help it but fall asleep. There's another very powerful molecule in our brain called caffeine that when we consume it and put it into our brain, it actually has a similar shape to the adenosine molecule and it jams the adenosine receptors. So that's why caffeine makes you feel awake, which is awesome at 4 o'clock when you have your cup of coffee and now you're feeling alert, and terrible at 10 p.m. when there's still like half of the caffeine floating around your brain, jamming your sleep pressure. So the half-life of caffeine is somewhere between 6 to 8 hours, which means that you want to probably go 10 to 12 hours without caffeine to make sure you're at maximum sleep pressure when you want to fall asleep, which means no caffeine after noon. For most people, caffeine affects you strongly. Even if it didn't when you're 20, by the time you're 40 or 50, it really does. We become more sensitive as we age. So one of the easiest things that you can do to sleep is to simply drop those last few cups of coffee and stop your caffeine at noon.
Now, I suppose there must be some degree of individual variability. My wife claims that caffeine doesn't impact her sleep, and she will drink it in the late afternoon or even at night. And so I would assume, like so many things in among humans, people are different. And
absolutely. So we have there's genetic variability to the breakdown to caffeine. Some people are able to metabolize caffeine quite rapidly. Others are not. I am genetically a slow caffeine metabolizer. It's demonstrated by my 23andMe and my inability to have coffee like after 10 a.m. However, for just about everybody, that ability to metabolize caffeine decreases as you age. Yeah. There are some things that increase it. So interestingly, smoking cigarettes while drinking coffee increases the metabolism of caffeine. And that's, you know, possibly why they go so nicely together. But there are plenty of people that say that they can drink a cup of coffee at 8 p.m. and fall right asleep. Well, maybe they can, but is their quality of sleep as deep as it could be? Yeah. You know, or are they as deep in delta for as long, you know, as they need to be? Or is the caffeine actually still affecting them? Yeah. So I invite you to challenge gently your wife and see if she doesn't do it, how it goes.
Yeah, yeah. I'll come back to the caffeine. I've got these blue glasses, are they? There they are. You can see the kind of blue. And these were promoted as good glasses for working on a computer, not for having a podcast interview, though, which is why I don't wear them, because the blue reflection, I think, is weird.
Blocking blue light.
Yeah. And so that would be congruent with what you were saying, right?
Exactly. Now, the blue light blocking glasses that you get to work on computers are good for eye fatigue. I mean, the jury's still out how great they are, but they are not sufficient for blocking blue light to increase your melatonin production. So at night, if you really want to you're committed to sleeping well, you want to get some blue light blocking glasses that literally look orange as you look through them, that are really, really dark orange, that are blocking a dramatic amount of the blue light. And that's going to help your melatonin production. Oh. Also on your phone, most phones have a night mode or a night shift that decreases the blue light production in the phone at night and makes it look orange. It's not a total solution, but it's a little bit better. At least you're reducing some amount of the blue light.
Yeah. I've had something going on personally recently of I fall asleep easily. And as a matter of fact, we're watching TV at night, and my wife likes to stay up longer than I do and watch more TV than I do. But I get the sleep pressure that you were talking about, where it just starts to feel almost painful to just try to keep watching TV. So I insist I'm going to go to bed. Yeah. And so I can fall asleep generally quite easily. More recently, I've started to wake up. This didn't used to happen, but I start to have these awakenings where I get into more obsessive worry mode, or the attacking part of my brain starts to beat up on me during the night. What are your thoughts around that?
Just 1 second. My child is just at the door.
Oh, wow.
Miro, I'm doing a podcast, my lovey love.
Didn't you say till 11:15?
Well, it's till at least 3:15, my sweet love. I'll be done short. I'll tell you when I'm done.
We'll be done pretty soon, too.
He'll be fine.
Okay.
He'll be fine. So that is incredibly common. Also, once a pattern is established, as we talked about, our bodies are great at patterns. So if you wake up consistently at night at 3 o'clock for a few nights, your body then thinks that's what we need to do. Mm-hmm. And when you wake up at that time and you start to engage your discursive mind and your worries, of course, that is going to keep you awake, and that's going to perpetuate the awakenness. So some good techniques to use when that happens. Meditation is like frontline before you go to bed to reduce the worry anxiety. When you wake up at night, focus your attention on your breath, but also you can address the anxiety and let it know, hey, whatever it is we're thinking about, we don't need to be thinking about it now. You know, your brain is serving it to you because it feels like it's productive in that moment. It feels like it needs to do this work now to figure it out. And you can really have a conversation with it and say, you know what? Tomorrow morning, I'm going to schedule time at 10 a.m. and we can think about this. And it'll be great thinking that, because it'll be dedicated time for you. Right now, we're allowed to sleep.
Yeah. I'm going to try using the Muse before going to sleep, since I haven't been doing that. And we'll see. Maybe that will help with that.
And then, of course, if you have the Muse S with the digital sleeping pills, you can just wear the Muse throughout the night. When you wake up at 3 a.m., it will come back in automatically with content, meditation, audio that will just put you back into sleep. And then you don't have the opportunity to engage your discursive mind in the same way.
That sounds good. Now, an interview that I had, a couple of interviews with, and I'm going to block on his name, but somebody who has worked with Dr. Andrew Weil and his center, right? And this guy is a sleep expert. And you know, and we got into talking about waking up to urinate.
Yes.
And I do wake up, I get a number, and it's probably age-related in part, but I do wake up to urinate several times during the night. He maintained that, no, you don't need to do that. It's a myth. You do not need to wake up and go to the bathroom. And I...
So- For some people, it's a myth. For some people, it's not. For most people, you want to cut your liquids 3 hours before you go to sleep. And for a lot of people, after I told them that, it's a game changer. Like, oh, if I just stop drinking 3 hours before I go to bed, I won't have to pee in the night. Particularly as men age, as your prostate changes, the frequency of urination in the night just increases. That's really normal. If you do have to get up, don't make a big deal about it. Keep the lights dim. Put on a nightlight or no light if you can, and just go back to sleep and just give yourself permission. It's okay. Sometimes we wake up to have to do that, and sometimes we go back, and then you go back to sleep.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Anything else that we should touch on that we haven't mentioned that you would want to get into this conversation for people?
Let me think. So there's one more cool thing that I think might be of interest to your clinicians community, which is a feature called Biofeedback Plus. So we're now able to use the Muse biofeedback and neurofeedback on top of any other audio. So if you have, you know, guided meditations that you or hypnotherapy tapes that you like to use with your clients, you can actually use the Muse biofeedback simultaneously while those play all, you know, from the, your phone or the client's phone or, you know, any phone that you have in your office. So that's a very cool feature. And the other thing that I just want to leave you with is that, you know, each and every one of us have the opportunity to shift what goes on in our mind. And as soon as you gain insight about what is going on, once you see it, once you recognize it, you have the opportunity to start to shift and change it. So none of us are prisoners of our own mind or our own habits or our own behaviors. Yeah.
Well, it's delightful to speak with you again. And I learned some new stuff, which is always fun and exciting. And so let's keep in touch. Let me know what happens as you move forward. And Ariel Garten, I want to thank you for being my guest again today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
It was my joy and pleasure. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Until today's interview with neuroscientist and entrepreneur Ariel Garten, I hadn't fully appreciated just how much of a pioneer she is in the wearable computing industry. The Muse brain scanning headset was a real breakthrough product when it was first introduced in 2014. Ariel tells us that at that point in time, the idea of a meditation trainer struck some people as strange. That was before meditation became the huge phenomenon it is today. Ariel had a head start in brain monitoring as a result of her work with Steve Mann, who has been recognized as, quotes, the father of wearables. An even more capable version, the Muse 2, was released in 2018. A subsequent article dubbed it a Fitbit for the brain. The mindfulness meditation revolution of recent years can probably be attributed to Jon Kabat-Zinn, whose mindfulness-based stress reduction trainings for professionals brought a patina of medical/scientific respectability to the ancient practice. Stripped of its Buddhist trappings, MBSR was being used successfully in the treatment of stress, anxiety, depression, and pain. Ariel tells us that her own customer research findings were that many people, lacking personal guidance, were having difficulty figuring out if they were, quotes, doing it right. The Muse headset was indeed giving them the feedback from their own brains to guide them into the alpha brain waves associated with deep relaxation. "Build it and they will come," is the famous line from the Kevin Costner movie. Indeed, Ariel and her colleagues did build it, and the customers did come and have continued to do so. In my interview with her, I was especially impressed by her instincts as a researcher to invite psychotherapists and other professionals into a collaborative relationship with the company. As a result, they've been able to gather key information to guide their ongoing product development. Most impressive to me is the database of brainwave information from thousands of customers. I was particularly excited to hear about their latest product, which is the Muse S, a comfortable fabric headband which wirelessly provides a rich mix of sleep-related biological feedback to its users. Ariel tells us they are marketing it somewhat tongue-in-cheek as, quotes, a digital sleeping pill. In fact, we know that the market for actual pharmacological sleeping pills is huge because so many suffer from poor sleep. While I've used the Muse 1 and the Muse 2 and can attest to their value, I have no personal experience with the Muse S. I have to say, though, that it sounds like a wonderful boon to those with a variety of sleep problems. As Ariel pointed out, to spend a night in a sleep therapy lab typically would cost around $2,000. This device will not only provide personal feedback, but also can be used to provide data to sleep professionals, if that is what's needed. And at a fraction of the cost, and with far less discomfort and inconvenience. I've also been aware of how many wearable devices are now targeting heart rate variability, or HRV, feedback. In part, I think this is the result of breakthroughs in our understanding of the vagal nervous system. I hope you heard my recent interview with Stephen Porges, PhD. He's the scientist who has really elaborated the role of the vagal system in our sense of safety or threat. In my interview with Ariel, I loved her simple, clear explanation of heart rate variability and why it's an important measure to monitor and train. Basically, it's a measure of how long it takes for your heart to recover between breaths. As such, it's a measure of your heart's flexibility to recover from stress. You really should listen to Ariel's explanation in the interview, because I'm reporting all this without notes and without reviewing the recording. So my mileage may vary in terms of accuracy. Now, you can explore the products I've been discussing at choosemuse.com. Ariel has graciously offered to share her email address here for those of you who may be psychotherapists or other professionals with questions about these products. You can reach her at ariel@choosemuse.com.
Hi, Dr. Dave. You have a fantastic podcast with fantastic interviews and a really wide range of fantastic guests. Thank you for what you do. But this message is about the not-so-fantastic reasons that some of your listeners don't financially support Shrink Wrap Radio. My silly reason? I've had a PayPal account for years and years, but it's associated with the email address for my small business. I kept meaning to talk to my bookkeeper about how an ongoing donation would and wouldn't work gracefully, but I never remembered to do it. And months went by. Every time I listened to a new episode, oh right, that! Just a few weeks ago, it dawned on me. Hello, self! You have personal email too! You could solve this by simply sidestepping your absent-mindedness. Account made, problem solved, donation launched. And what a silly reason to have taken so long. So listeners, what's your silly reason? It's already there. It's free. Why should I pay for something that's free? I'm guessing this is one of the most common silly reasons. But think of it this way. Lots of people are creating great content for free these days, which is pretty fantastic when you pause to think about it. And the free content that catches on and inspires actual people to spend actual money, that content is more likely to persist and to inspire other similar content. So by donating to Shrink Wrap Radio, you are an agent for content evolution. You're saying, yes, I wish to help curate this space and encourage not only this content to continue, but also prove the viability for other similar content. Not donating because you already get it for free? That's a silly reason, and also kind of self-defeating. How about, I don't have enough money to donate? Okay, I challenge you to choose a teeny amount of money. It could be a dollar, or a quarter, or 11 cents. Whatever amount you could lose in the street and really not fret about it. That's a teeny amount. Each time you listen to an episode, put that teeny amount of money in the shrink wrap jar. Once that jar accumulates a few bucks, send it off. It might not make much of a financial difference, but it will definitely make a personal difference, both for Dr. Dave and for you. Or maybe you love the show and would be happy to donate, but you don't do PayPal, have never done PayPal, and never will do PayPal. Send Dr. Dave a check. Here's a reason that's not silly. I've just started listening, and I don't yet know if the show is fantastic. Fair enough. Completely non-silly reason. So listen to another couple dozen episodes and then donate. And if, for some reason, you say, I've listened to tons of episodes and this is an awful show. Well, in that case, I hope you have a pleasant journey back to your home planet, wherever it is, and that your time visiting Earth was enjoyable. My name is Sarinda, and I am delighted to be a continuing supporter of Shrink Wrap Radio.
Wow, Sarinda, I love your splendid reasoning and articulation of why our listeners should become donors. Thank you so much for that. Once again, as I review the honor roll and putting together today's podcast, I'm so appreciative of all you monthly donors. And in fact, I'd like to read out the names of you monthly contributors whose donations have landed in the last several days. And they are Kimberly Tangen, PhD, Sue Ellen Taylor, Cynthia Moore, Margareta Scheipner, Sebastian Filzek, Alan Tabor, Michael Gintner, Sean Dunn, and Elizabeth Cox. Thank you each so much. And aside from becoming a monthly donor, you can also help by evangelizing Shrink Wrap Radio to your friends, family, and colleagues. We can use more listeners. And of course, thank you to all you other monthly supporters. Your regular donations mean so much to me personally and also help to support the regular expenses that the show incurs. Time to shrink wrap it up. Thanks to my return guest, Ariel Garten, inventor of the Muse brain scanning headset, for sharing the latest developments in the brain feedback arena, as well as those in her own company. Next week, I'll be interviewing return guest Dr. Edward Tick about his continuing anti-war activism and his remarkable book, Coming Home in Vietnam. I hope you will join us then. And until then, this is Dr. Dave reminding you to be kind to yourselves and others.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.